Isn't that funny? Yeah. If this is your first time here, you came on the perfect Sunday. We're kicking off a series, a relationship series. And so just to kind of do a quick survey, if you were married or in a relationship, would you raise your hand real quick? Yeah, I'm so glad that you're here. You came on the perfect Sunday for that. Now, if you are here today and you're single, if you're single, would you raise your hand and keep them up and look around? And if you don't like your options, we have three services, right? See, I'm trying to help you out already, right? So no matter what season of life you're in, if you're in love, fell out of love, or looking for love, the good news is what I've found is if you have a pulse, you have potential to fall in love. Falling in love is easy. That takes about 10 seconds. Like, and here's how I know. Some of you have fell in love with people that you've never met. Like they're like on TV and you're like, wow, it's an actor or an actress, or on Instagram and you're like in love, right? You've been in love with people that you've never met, but what they never really tell you at the end of a romantic comedy is falling in love is easy. Falling in love is easy. It's staying in love that takes work. And most of us, I think, when we think of marriage, we haven't, you know, we know how it's going to play out. Like, we're going to fall in love, and it's going to be so, so easy to stay in love, and every moment is going to be lovey-dovey, and we're never going to lose that love and feeling. And in fact, in the nursing home, when we're both with walkers, we're flirting with each other going down the hall, right? And people will look at us and go, wow, they're old. And they still love each other. Like, that's what's in our mind, right? And if you're thinking about this, you probably even know how you're going to die. Like, in your sleep, holding hands with the one you love. So you see, no one gets in a relationship thinking, you know what? They make me miserable. And I just want to hold on to this miserable feeling forever. Let's just tie the knot. Like, no one does that. No one got married in order to stay miserable. But the truth is, and the reality is, married or single, we have this in common. Once you're in a relationship with someone, even if overall it's a good relationship, at some point in the relationship, it tends to be not what you thought. That they don't handle conflict the way that you dreamed that they would handle conflict. They focus on or obsess about or care about stuff that you never even knew existed before you met them. The butterflies, they fade. They have all of these expectations of love and life and you that you really never even considered. I mean, for good or for bad, every relationship has this in common. At some point in the life of the relationship, it turns to be not what you thought. I know this is true for my wife, Becky. Like, for her, it's so much better than she ever dreamed, hoped, or imagined. I wish. Right? No, when all relationships have this in common, there's this moment, it's not what I thought. Now, if you're single or engaged, I'm so glad you're here. I think future you will thank you for joining in these next few weeks, because it will give you some context to a God-honoring relationship. It'll give you some expectations and how to uncover. We're going to even uncover some myths about relationships. So if you're here today and your relationship is struggling, I believe you're in the right place, because church should be the place that you go to when things aren't working right. Like, I never go to the ER and go, look at all these sick people here. Like, that never happens. So if you're hurting, you're in the right place. Even if you're contemplating divorce, I want you to think about it this way. To get a divorce because you've run out of love is like selling your car because you ran out of gas. Like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, when you run out of love, what should you do? Make efforts to refuel the love, rekindle the love, restart the love. To which you might be thinking, refuel the love. Yeah, right. We're way past empty. There's nothing that they can do. There's nothing that they can say. And if that's you, I'm not going to guilt you. But if that's you, I do want to encourage you that you're in the right place, because God is love. God is love. It's not just something he does. It's who he is. And so no matter how hopeless you might think your love is, with God, there is hope for your marriage. To which you might say, Josh, how do you know that? I serve a God who brings dead things back to life. That's how I know. In fact, if you're in a relationship and as a couple, you put into practice what God says is right and true, not only will you grow closer to God, I promise you that you will grow closer to each other. See, when you invite God into the relationship, it gives you a common heading. It gives you a common goal to be in this God-honoring relationship. And as you individually grow closer to God, I promise you, you will automatically grow closer to one another. That's not a promise that self-help books can make. Right? Just, in fact, our culture out there is trying to redefine love. Our culture is trying to sell us this mindset of love that you and I should never stop looking for love. I call this the right one myth. The right one myth. Culture will tell you, hey, if you hit a snag, if you have a disagreement, it's not your fault. You just haven't found the right one yet. And this can go both ways. Like if you're single, you need to look for the right one. And that might freeze you. You won't date anyone in fear that you won't have not found the right one. Or you could date everyone until you find the right one. But if you believe this when you're married, it actually gets a little worse because the minute your spouse does not exceed your expectations, you begin to think, oh no, it's because I just haven't found the right one. And our advice from culture is to never, you should never stop looking for the one. And if you're single, if the grass is greener on the other side, truth be told, it might be time to break up. I mean, it might be time to head to greener pastures, but if you're married and the grass is greener on the other side, water your own grass, right? Invest in the relationship you're in. Now, our culture feeds us a steady diet of these love stories that tell us that the minute we're not feeling it, the minute we're not feeling the love, we need to find a new boo. So we don't fight for love. And so if you fall out of love and not feeling the love, just keep on looking for the right one. Did you know that there are 1,500 organizations that if you pay them some money, fill out a profile, they can connect you with somebody with a similar profile? I mean, you might not believe me, but it has never been easier to fall in love. But I would argue it's never been harder to stay in love, to stay in love. In fact, you see, because we have all of these expectations about love and misinformation about love, of what love is, and what love isn't. And whenever life gets hard, and don't hear me, I'm not saying an abusive situation. If you're feeling that you're in that, seek godly counsel. Get godly advice. But too often, when life gets hard and when love gets hard, and the minute you're not feeling it, you convince yourself to chase the feeling you had at first. And so you think, hey, what was I doing the last time I had that loving feeling? Well, I was looking for the one. And we think, I don't need to change anything about me. I just need to find a new one of them, right? I just want you to kind of think about this out loud. The feeling that you get at the beginning of a relationship where your stomach has butterflies and your heart is racing and your palms are sweaty and you're like this mixture of nervous and excitement about what's going to potentially happen next. If you're single and looking for that, if you say it out loud, do you know what it sounds like? Falling in love sounds like getting the flu. Right? Who wants to feel that for 50 years? Nobody. And if you're married and you miss the feeling of butterflies and a racing heart and nervous excitement, this is the same feeling that happens when you get pulled over by a police officer. So if you are married and you're looking for that feeling, buy a Camaro, speed down the highway, roll through a stop sign, but don't ruin what God has established. Right? Just to chase a feeling. Now, I think some of you might be dismissing me because you've been like, Josh, I've been married for a while. We've been in this thing for a while. You need to study harder, right? Don't you have anything else? Well, let me just ask you this. Do you know when the great King David, the man after God's own heart, was looking for love on his roof? Most people assume it was when he was in his 30s. But history tells us that the great King David was in his 60s when he found the one that wrecked his life. I mean, I'm telling you, our culture is trying to sell us this version to never stop looking for the one instead of teaching us to stand up for love and to pursue love and to fight for the love that we have. So if you're new to church or new to faith, one of our values here at Victory is to place our life underneath biblical authority. That we believe that when we follow God and honor God and trust God, it does not always make our life easier, but I promise it makes our life better. We believe that God gave us his word to protect us and direct us and to lead us to a better way to do life. And I'll be transparent. There's a lot of paths out there. There's a lot of definitions of love out there. There's a lot of options promising life and excitement and fulfillment. And it really can be confusing, but Jesus says, no, follow me. Follow me and I will lead you to a better way. Leave all of that behind and follow me and I will lead you to hope and healing. See, Jesus' followers believe that marriage is established by God. Marriage is between one man and one woman for life. Our culture thinks, like Christians, they hate sex. They hate marriage. Like not Jesus followers should love sex. Jesus followers should have better sex. Why? Because they follow the one who designed sex. And God created sex to be inside the marriage covenant between one man and one woman only. So that means that as Jesus followers, we're not inviting anything into the relationship. We're not inviting pornography in. We're not inviting OnlyFans in. We're not inviting anything in to divide or separate or sabotage what was established in the presence of God. Marriage is to be between one man and one woman for life. Why? Well, because marriage is important to God. In fact, in the book of Revelation, the apostle John has this vision of heaven. He describes it this way. I saw a holy city, the New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. So when John tries to describe a picture of heaven, of all of the things that he could think about, he chooses this moment where a bride comes down an aisle to meet her groom. The bride is a picture of heaven. The groom waiting to receive his bride is a picture of heaven. According to John, marriage is the picture of the restoration of all things and the perfection of all things. Now, I'm not saying your marriage is all heaven all of the time. You're still going to argue. It's not going to be perfect. But if you take God at his word, at the end of your life, your marriage can be one of the most rewarding, inspiring experiences of your life. All we have to do is place our life underneath biblical authority. I truly believe it gives us a better way to do life. And that's why you need to stop getting your relationship advice from TikTok, right? That's why you need to stop getting your relationship advice from your non-Christian friends, right? Or self-help books. Because culture that we live in, it wants to redefine love, and it will never, ever fight for love. But the desire to love and be love, that's in our DNA. John, who walked with Jesus, informs us God is love. And that's why we can trust Jesus and follow Jesus, even when the whole world is going all of these different paths, because we know that where Jesus is leading, he's leading to deeper relationships, deeper purpose, greater intimacy. Following Jesus leads to life and love because God is love. And so when it comes to your love life, Jesus says, follow me. But the world is cheering for you to follow what? Your heart. Let me just ask, if following your heart actually led to peace and hope and life, we would look around our culture and we'd see unified, loving, happy couples everywhere we looked, right? If following your heart actually worked, there wouldn't be a need for counselors or divorce attorneys or addiction recovery centers. See, true love takes a different path. And all of this should inform myth number two, right? Maybe you've heard this. Married people have married problems. I hear this. I go, if you're single, like, why would you want to get married, right? All my married friends have married problems, so I'm just going to put the sin in single. No. Right? Married people have married problems, but this is a myth because I've never talked to a married couple who actually had marriage problems. Here's what I've discovered is that people with problems got married, right? People with issues, they get married. And I have my issues and my spouse has their issues and we get together and our issues now have issues. Meaning that no matter how hard you search for the right one, no matter how talented they are or rich they are or hot they are, marriage cannot solve our sin problem. So let me ask it this way. You know the common denominator to every disagreement you've ever had? To every argument you've ever had? To every bad date you've been on? You are the common denominator, and the same can be said of me. We are part of the problem. Married people don't have problems. That's a myth. People with problems get married. People with troubles, they get married, and they have a troubled marriage. And that's why Jesus says, hey, follow me. Let me lead you away from that. Let me lead you to the rescue of all things and the perfection of all things. In fact, when you open up your Bible, you know what you will find or you won't find? You won't find how to find the one. But scripture will challenge you and it will challenge me to be ourselves conformed to the image of Christ. In our relationships, it's all about who you and I, who we're becoming. But our culture doesn't see it that way. They see the wedding as the finish line. And the reason we believe that is because of all of the fairy tales and all of the rom-coms and the romance movies. What do they end with? The marriage. They never end in year 7 at 6 a.m. trying to get the kids ready for school. The end. They never end year 12 plunging the toilet at 2:30 in the morning going, they lived happily ever after. Like, they never end in year 29 with the millionth argument about where are we going to eat. Culture has taught us that the wedding is the finish line. That the moment the couple walks down the aisle in a place like this and stands up in front of a people like you, right, and makes promises to each other, they will walk out and they live happily ever after. But you probably don't realize this, but when you walk down this aisle, we all do this, when we carry our own personal box of hopes and dreams and desires. When you walk down the aisle, you carry this idea about the future, right? And what you're gonna do and how you're gonna spend your money. And some of you are thinking, oh, we're gonna have a lot of money, right? Or we don't need money. Love will keep us alive. All right, we're gonna work on a budget. To which maybe she's like, budget, that sounds controlling. Or we're gonna spend it like we have double the income, but one of us is gonna stay at home. My dream is to hit the lottery, we can both stay at home, but we all have an idea about money. We walk down that aisle, we carry with us our own idea about our future hopes and dreams when it comes to chores, right? He's like saying, in my family, my mom did all the chores. Well, in my family, chores was a team effort. Right? Each person, when they walk down the aisle, they carry with them their idea about their future hopes and dreams about like where they're gonna live, right? And one of them says, well, I'm gonna rent. The other one says, are you kidding me? That's a waste of money. Well, we're gonna buy a really nice home. No, I don't wanna do that. I wanna be on HGTV. Let's buy a fixer upper. I mean, each person, they come into this relationship and they have this idea about what they're gonna drive. And you're like, I'm gonna drive a Jeep. She's gonna drive a minivan, right? Where each person carries with them their own idea about like how many kids we're gonna have, maybe. There we go, right? We're gonna have two girls. And if we have two girls, we're gonna keep trying till we get a boy, even if we have to have a basketball team, right? No one likes a quitter, right? Each person, they carry with them their own ideas about their future hopes and dreams, how you're gonna spend your free time, right? And one of them says, well, you know, I think I'm gonna go, all my free time, I'm gonna go fishing and hunting with the boys. And she's like, our free time, I'm gonna go shopping with the girls, or no, we're gonna spend our free time together. We don't have any free time, it's together time. Each person, they have this idea or future about their hopes and dreams about how they're gonna deal with the calendar. And if you've been married or in a relationship, you remember how fun this was to figure out what holidays you're gonna spend with their family? And she says, oh, honey bear, right? I just need 3 days a year, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter, right? And your family can have like all of the rest, like Halloween and Hanukkah and Groundhog's Day and leap year. I mean, each person carries with them their own idea about what their wife will not wear. She thinks, he doesn't care. He just wants, the man I marry just wants me to be comfortable. I'm telling you, each person carries with them their own idea about their future hopes and dreams of how you're gonna resolve the arguments in your relationship. And you're like, well, I grew up, they held grudges. In my family, I grew up, whoever yelled the loudest won. In my family, when I grew up, my mama always caved. Right, and when I grew up, we just buried it, and we just angry at each other all of the time, right? But each person, when we come into a relationship, and you walk into a place like this, we put all of this stuff in our box, and we think, if she loved me, she would never. If he loved me, he would always. And you probably never really defined all of it. I think most people don't discuss most of it, but we all have a box. And there's several things that impact our box. It's what you've seen in the other relationships, like what you've seen your parents do or your grandparents do. It's what you've seen in culture. But the biggest determining factor of what gets put in my box and what is put in your box is what we've experienced. All right, if you really start digging around too much about why things are in there, I'm telling you, it can get complicated and emotional pretty quickly. But most of our hopes and dreams and desires are response to what we grew up in and what we grew up around. What we grew up in and what we grew up around. So that means that in our relationships, we're either trying, and this is big, trying to avoid something, or we're trying to recreate something. So we're either in a relationship that says, I want my relationship to be like that, get me that, or We're saying, I don't want to be like my dad. I don't want to be like my mom. We're either trying to avoid something or we're trying to recreate something. And part of the problem with our view of marriage is we married them to complete us. Thank you, Jerry Maguire, right? To make us better, to make us happier. We did not marry them to become more like Christ. And I'm not blaming you. I did it too. We all carry with us our own box of hopes and dreams and the desires. And the problem is, at some point along the way, and we never really do this on purpose, but at some point along the way, we take our box of dreams and hopes and desires and say, here, make them come true. I mean, this is what I always dreamed our relationship would be like. This is what I thought I was promising you in front of all of these people. This is what I hoped it would be like. This is what I was wanting you to buy me so I could drive. This is what I thought you would be wearing. You know, this is where I wanted to live now. Get it for me. And unintentionally, what we're saying is the reason I pursued you, the reason I even asked you out, the reason I even wanted to stand up in a place like this and ask you to marry me, the reason I walked down the aisle with you is because in my mind, this is what my future looked like. And I need you to go get it for me. See, the problem is when we hand our special someone, the one that we really do love, our box of dreams and hopes and desires, do you think it feels like dreams and hopes and desires? No, it feels like an assignment. It feels like a weight. It can be an anchor. See, the single greatest reason relationships fail is because of unmet expectations. The single greatest reason relationships fail is because of unmet expectations. Webster says, expectations are a strong belief that something will happen or be the case in the future. And so we're kind. We're not thinking, hey, we're going to get all that in the first month or maybe not in the first year, but we're going to get there, right, honey? It's not our dream home now, not our dream car now, not our dream family yet, but we're working on it, right, honey? See, expectations, a strong belief that something will happen or be the case in the future. And over time, you see what happens? There's this gap between what we expect and what we experience. And whenever your relationship turns to be not what you thought, it's there, right there in the gap, you'll find disappointment. Do you see it? Right there in the gap, you're gonna find disconnectedness. Right there in the gap, you're gonna find frustration. It's right there in the gap. And when this takes place in a relationship, we'll say things. Maybe you said, they let me down. They hurt me. They can't be trusted. When there's a gap between what we expect and what we experience. And when we are handed this box, we think, I can't live up to this. I'll never be able to buy that. This is too heavy to carry. But when there's a gap between what we expect and what we experience, we think, this is not what I thought. This is not what I signed up for. They changed the rules on me. They must not be the one. It's time to find another one to give this box to. I mean, see how dangerous that can be when there's a gap between what you expect and what you experience. And I don't think anybody does this on purpose. And everyone is just doing what everybody else is doing. But the reason this doesn't work is that in any relationship, expectations create a debt-debtor relationship. See, the moment I give Becky my box, whenever I put all of my hopes and wishes and dreams on her, that means I expect her to make them happen for me. And I'm living under the assumption that she owes me. So that we're married and you're mine. So you owe me your attention. You owe me your affection. You're in debt to me. You owe it to me to make sure I enjoy how we do kids and travel and money. You owe it to me to make sure that the house is clean or that you stay fit. You owe me. Expectations create a debt-debtor relationship. And then we wonder, I wonder why there's this distance in our relationship. I wonder why there's this gap. I wonder why there's this frustration. I was listening to a counselor talk, and they said something I thought was interesting. They said, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes the reason sex decreases in a relationship is because it's hard to be attracted to someone you blame for all your problems. In the beginning, sex was great because you were united, you were happy. But as the gap grew, so did the frustration. And it's hard to be attracted to someone you're mad at. The single greatest reason there is frustration in a relationship. The single greatest reason there's anger in a relationship. The single greatest reason relationships fail is because of unmet expectations. And if you're looking for another way, or if you're looking for a better way, Jesus would say, follow me. Follow me, because this is not the kind of love I had in mind when I created love to begin with. Because expectations create a debt-debtor relationship that actually eliminate the possibility of unconditional love. That's what Jesus talks about, is unconditional love. I mean, think about it this way. If I buy Becky flowers because I owe her, the flowers only get me back to even. If I owe you, I can only do what is expected of me. So that means I can't go above and beyond. I can't really love you. So if that's what couples are supposed to do, and if that's what men are supposed to do, or if that's what women are supposed to do, we can't ever get past even. If I can only do what's expected, that means I can't actually love you. Because no matter how hard I try, even if I meet all of your expectations, I can only get back to even. So I can't ever do or buy or make you feel like I actually love you. And so even though I fall in love, we give up on love and we stop fighting for love. And the good news is that's not what God had in mind when he created love. Now, part of the problem is how common the word love is in the English language. You can say you love French fries and coffee and puppies and your spouse, right? It's the same word. Hopefully it's different meaning. Now, in the first century, when the Apostle Paul was telling the Jesus followers about the kind of love that God has for us and the kind of love that we're to have for each other, he uses a very specific word. It's agape love. It's an active love. It's more than a feeling. It's an action, right? You can also be translated show love. So this kind of love is a verb. And it brings with it this idea of a selfless love. I want what's best for you, even if it's not best for me. It's a sacrificial love, because I love you, I'm going to sacrifice for you. It's a decision love. Do you know there's a time you're going to have to decide, I'm just going to have to decide to love you today, right? It's a decision love, a love no matter what. So no matter how you treated me, I'm deciding to love you today. The good news is that's the kind of love that God has for me. That's the kind of love that God has for you, a decision love. So that means that we're going to show everyone around us how much we love each other in that moment. And get the deal, it rocked the first followers of Jesus because they had no category for a God who could actually love them unconditionally. Because in pagan worship, the gods did not care about the people. No, the gods toyed with the people. The gods would manipulate the people. Their view of God was this debtor relationship. And to make the gods happy, what would they do? They would sacrifice to the gods, their kids or their crops. Why? They wanted to manipulate the gods to do what they wanted. So their view of God was this debtor relationship that actually kills true love. So when Paul introduces that God is love, that God actually cares about his people, that God made the first move and sacrificed his son, it rocked their world. Now, the passage I want to show with you was written to about 150 Jesus followers around 54 AD in Corinth. People who, before they followed Jesus, many of them followed Aphrodite, the goddess of love. So they believed that Aphrodite was born out of the sea, and that's who they worshiped, the goddess of love. They actually had a temple that loomed over the city of Corinth. This is a picture of what it probably would have looked like back then. Greek mythology reveals that she was the most sexually active goddess. And if her partner wasn't making her happy, Aphrodite would just seduce a new partner. And so when the people in Corinth grew up and learned about love, they learned from who? The goddess of love. And the people receiving Paul's letter valued independence and happiness, but their highest value, their highest aim was pleasure. That was their definition of love. So Paul writes this letter to this church about the kind of love that God has for us and the kind of love that we're to have for each other to inform them, hey, you're a Jesus follower. So Jesus followers don't love like everybody else. And Jesus followers don't give up on their partner like everybody else. And Jesus followers don't marry like everybody else. And the most famous part of his letter is read in weddings all over the world. It's 1 Corinthians 13. It reads this way: if I speak in the tongues of men or angels, but have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. So even if I could actually tap into the language of the angels, but I do not show love, you're just a lot of noise. If I have the gift of prophecy, so even if I can tell the future and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am what? Nothing. Literally translated, even if I'm the smartest person in the room, right, but I don't show love, I'm a nobody. If I give all I possess, so not 10%, not 20%, all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast but do not have love, I gain no thing. So anybody who gives to gain, gains nothing. It's a debt, debtor relationship. That relationship will never last. Now, in this next part, Paul wants them to understand that love means action. He says, love is patient. Love is kind. So love defers. I know what I want, but I want to defer to you. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. So love does not try to one-up the other person. Love does not dishonor others. Love never says, hey, kids, you know your dad never. Hey, kids, you know your mom always. Love never belittles. It does not dishonor. It is not self-seeking. I'm putting your needs ahead of my needs. It is not easily angered. This is the next one. It's a big one. It keeps no record of wrongs. Wouldn't that be pretty awesome in a relationship? Or you could just keep no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices with the truth. And then check out this rapid fire list. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. So the world says, hey, you're looking for love. The world's trying to help redefine love. But God says, follow me to the kind of love. And when you do, that kind of love never fails. So maybe you came here today because your relationship turned out to be not what you thought. But Jesus says, I have a better way. Let me define love for you. Follow me and I'll rekindle your love. Refocus on me and I'll rekindle your love. Follow me to the kind of love that actually never fails. Jesus, follow or not, I basically have challenge for you. You get to choose your own adventure. All right, two different challenges. You pick the one that applies to you. But if you're single in a relationship, let me just ask, are you the person that you're looking for is looking for? Is your idea of relationship, is it about who you're becoming? I mean, if you found the person that you were looking for, would they be like, I found them, right? And what do you need to work on how to become more like Christ? So my challenge for you is for the next 5 days is to redefine your version of love. And I want you to put your name instead of the word love. So I want you to read this passage and basically say every day for the next 5 days, Josh is patient, Josh is kind, he does not envy, he does not boast. Put your name in that section. And redefine what love is for you and who you are becoming. It always perseveres and Josh never fails. See, I'm telling you, only when we trust God and follow God are we gonna see a difference in our love life. If you're married, I have another challenge for you. For the next 5 days, I want you to pray as a couple. Did you know that statistics say that 50% of marriages end in divorce? 26% of couples who go to church is still in a divorce. But 1 in 1,500 marriages where couples pray together end in divorce. I'm telling you, by doing this one thing, you can almost divorce-proof your marriage where you're praying for one another and pray as a couple once a day for the next 5 days. I'm telling you, if you get love right, it'll change your life. If you can get love right, it'll change the life of your family. If you can get love right, it will change how your kids view love. They'll see the kind of love that always protects, always trusts, always believes, always hopes, always perseveres, and they will see in you the kind of love that never fails. Would you pray with me? Father, we thank you today that you don't just love us, but you are love, that you model love. So Father, we pray that you just give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we just heard. Father, give us the courage to do it, to act on it. So in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.